The Asian Classics Institute presents What the Buddha Really Meant with Geshe Michael Roach, recorded live in New York City in November of 1998. This is the beginning of Class 10.
Class up to class 8 in the mind-only school, and then we changed class to the independent group inside the middle-way school, okay? Just to give you a little bit of review of the last class, there we had the independent group's idea that there are 3 degrees of what they call selflessness, okay? Which would be the, what would we call the subtle lack of a self to the person, and then the gross lack of a self to things, and then the subtle lack of a self to things. And according to the independent group, only the third one is true emptiness, although you could use the word emptiness for the other two. Then there was sort of a preliminary kind of selflessness, which was the gross lack of a self to persons. That one was, well, let's start from the top. Real emptiness in this school is what? How do they describe it? Huh? She was absent. That's lucky. Huh? Lack of what? Huh? Lack of existing truly, how's that, or something like that, okay? The lack of existing truly. And what is it to exist truly in this school? What is the existing truly that they say doesn't exist? Right? Okay? The fact that things don't exist from their own side, through their own identity, but rather simply by appearing to a state of mind which is unaffected. Okay? And if anything existed from its own side, as the who says they do? Mind only. Everything? No. Just dependent things and emptiness. Imaginary things don't exist from their own side. Okay? In the mind only school. Okay? So, if something did exist, anything at all did exist from its own side, according to the independent group, that would be a self-existent thing. The lack of that is emptiness, which is the subtle form of the lack of a self to self-nature to things. Okay? Got it? And that's real emptiness in the according to the independent group. Okay? What was the lack of a self, the the rough lack of a self or the gross lack of a self to things, like medium selflessness. Yeah, I mean, you did your quiz and just... Was that today's quiz?
No.
Suktan sumzingi temadzeishen gitoa, right? Suktan sumzingi temadzeishen gitoa. The fact that you and the thing you're perceiving, your perceptions and the thing which you're perceiving are void of having a separate substance or a separate karmic scene.
Okay?
And that to them is a kind of selflessness. In your reading, you'll see that they don't accept that as being emptiness. In fact, they accept it as being a deceptive reality, which takes it out of the realm of emptiness altogether. Okay? And then what about the subtle lack of a self nature to people or to persons? How do they describe that? Rangya tuba zayu kitoa. Okay? Say rangya tuba. Okay. The fact that people are devoid of any nature of being self-supporting, self-standing, and having any substantial existence. And then what did I promise you? Yeah. So that you didn't have a four-hour class last time, that we would do the five different flavors of substantial existence. But to get to that, you have to describe to me what's the gross lack of a self-nature to persons. Say dot, chick, Raman Chengi dot. You gotta be able to rattle this stuff off, or else the class is useless. You know what I mean? You won't ever be sensitive to the different flavors of emptiness. Okay? Like what 20 different people think emptiness is. The whole point of this class, the whole point of this particular course, is that when your student comes up to you and says, "I understood what emptiness is," and you say, "What?" and it says, "I heard this from a Buddhist scholar has been teaching at university for 20 years, you know, and they say, "Oh, emptiness means everything changes, you know." That doesn't even qualify as any kind of selflessness in the top three, you know what I mean? And they just never studied it. So don't forget it, you know, in a week. You're going to have this in your head for the rest of your life, okay? Say, tak, chik, rawan chengi da. Which means a self which could be takpa, unchanging, chik, unitary, whole, Ramachan, independent. Okay? And no, you know, it's hard to find a Buddhist school that would even think that. But here's, you know, one of the top three professors saying that's what emptiness is. Okay? I mean, that's, hopefully you've got to learn all those distinctions. Okay? Alright. So we go on to Zayu and Dayu. Say Zeya, Daya. Zeya, Daya. Zeya means in Tibetan substance or stuff, okay? Yu means substantial, okay? Zeta Yupa, Zeta Dupa, meaning substantial, okay? Dagya is the opposite. I'm translating it in your reading as constructed, meaning not something which is substantial or natural. Okay, and we'll have to see what the difference is. Okay, the reading that you're going to get, which comes again from Changya Rupa Dorje. Changya Rupa Dorje lived about 300 years ago and served as a lama to the Emperor of China. The Changya line in general, I think the first Changya served as the Emperor of the Chinese Lama. And I think it was the first Changya, who was there when Marco Polo reached the court of Kublai Khan. Okay, so I'm sorry, no, that was Pakpa. Cancel that. Anyway, of that lineage, Hutuktu lineage, recognized as high reincarnations by the Emperor of China and taught the Emperor of China. So in this line, which by the last member of this line was Pabongkor Rinpoche, okay, and due to certain circumstances in Tibet at that time, they called him Pabongka. They called him the reincarnation of Pabongka Lama, when in fact he was the reincarnation of Changya Lama, because there were too many, there was a lot of sentiment against Chinese stuff at the time, so they thought it would be safer to call him Pabongka Rinpoche. Okay? So anyway, his name was, that is Changya Rinpoche. Changya Rinpoche, the Changya Rupa Dorje, which is one of the later Changyas, not the first one, he wrote a book comparing all the different systems of philosophy. It's like 3-4 volumes long, and it's incredible. You know, every kind of Buddhist philosophy, comparing each school. So I've taken this selection from him. He wrote a beautiful description of what Zeyu means and Dayu means. He starts out by saying, and you'll see in your reading, he says, look, you look in Scripture, there's all these different meanings. They keep talking about substantial stuff and stuff which is not substantial, and it seems to have a whole bunch of different meanings, so I'm going to go through them for you. So he goes through five different flavors of Zeyu and Dayu for you. Okay, if you become a serious student of Tibetan Scripture, this is very useful to know, because otherwise you'll get totally confused. All right. So we're going to go through them one by one and discuss the difference between them. Okay. And then later on tonight we'll get to the highest Madhyamika interpretation of what's emptiness and what's not, and that'll wrap it up. Then the final thing tonight we'll have Jetsun Kapa's own viewpoint about which is correct. You know, at the end of his book, somebody says, well, which one do you think is right? You know, the mind-only school or the middle-way school? And he goes into an answer on that. Okay? So here we go. Say Yepa. Mepa. Yepa. Mepa. The first meaning of substantial or not substantial is existing or not existing, okay? Is this real, you know? Is this substantial? Does this have any substance to it? And then in the very most broad interpretation, it means, does this thing exist or not? Okay, so you say, this is substantial, you know, this has some existence. You say, yeah, it exists. Okay, and then insubstantial or a construct would mean something that doesn't exist, something you've made up in the mind which doesn't exist. What would be a classic example in this sense of something that was the opposite of substantial, something that was tagya, something that was just imaginary? Huh? Yeah, you could say a flower that grows in midair, without any water or soil or anything. But can you think of an even more meaningful example? Huh? The snake and the rope. Yeah, you could say the snake. Or what the snake stands for, which is what? The self-nature of a person and the self-nature of objects. Meaning your hand and your head and your chest. Okay? The non-existence, those imaginary things. Okay? A boss who is bad from his own side. Okay? A friend of yours who irritates you, who's irritating from their own side and not because you are making them that way. Okay? That person that you get angry at doesn't even exist. The irony of samsara, you know, the irony of our suffering is that we are creating it and sustaining it because of our attitude towards a thing which never existed, couldn't exist, doesn't exist, won't exist, okay? That's the irony of our situation. We are here in this realm, and we are dying because of our belief about something that can't exist anyway, okay? And that's a perfect example of a tagya in the first sense of the word, meaning something which is just made up in your mind, just a construct of your mind, constructed by your mind, okay? And the opposite of that would be Zeya, something substantial, this pen, my mind, okay? Stuff like that, okay? That's the first sense. You can put another number one next to it, okay? Now for the second sense. Say Ngupo. I'm sorry. Ngupo. Ngume. Ngupo. Ngume. Ngopo means anything that can perform a function, anything that does something. Okay, it's a synonym for a changing thing, which is a synonym for a cause thing, which is a synonym for a produced thing. They're all the same. Anything which changes has causes. Anything which performs a function changes by performing its function. Okay, so that's a Ngopo means that. So in this school, the people who think that substantial means that, anything that you can do something with it is substantial. And anything that you can't do something with it is not substantial. Okay? There's an idea in the sutra school of a thing called chiten. Say chiten. Rangten. Chiten. Rangten. We'll study it someday. Okay? Rangten means a pen in the sense of this pen, a pen, the pen. A pen, the pen, this pen. Okay? An actual example of a thing. Okay? Chitzen means pen as a concept. The idealization pen. What did Jung call it? The archetype of a pen. You see what I mean? And then there's lots of pens, and then there's a chitten of a pen. Okay? And chittens, according to this, to the sutra school, never change. Okay? They don't, and they don't perform a function. Pen. As opposed to a pen, the pen, this pen. Okay? Pen. Pen itself is a perfect idealization of a pen and will never change. You see? It doesn't like run out of ink. Okay? The concept of pen. Okay? The idealization of a pen. Okay? That's called chitten, and this is rangsen. So lupo means functional thing. Lume would seem to mean something which is not a functional thing. And in philosophy, in Buddhist philosophy, we were careful to say an existing object which doesn't function. So learn that. Those of you who are going to learn Tibetan, lume has a totally different meaning than what it looks like. It looks like it's saying not a lupo, or lack of a lupo, or something like that. It doesn't mean that at all. It means an existing object which is not a lupo, which is totally different from something which is not a lupo. Okay? Meaning, you can't define existing things which don't function as everything which is not a functional thing. Because things that don't exist could be that also. You see what I mean? Like the pumpkin that's smashing the Twin Towers is not a functional thing. But that doesn't make it an existing object which is not a functional thing. Big difference. Okay, so lume means, although it doesn't look like it should mean that, it's a standard term in Tibetan Buddhist philosophy that means an existing object which is not a functional thing. The Abhidharma only gives three. Sosatape, Sosatango, Sosatamingi Gopa, and Dumecheki Namka. Got any ideas? Dumecheki Namka, empty space. Okay? Does empty space change when you fill it? No. It's not like the space changed, you know? I filled the space, I emptied the space. The space is always there. Okay, it doesn't change. Okay, it doesn't. The presence of this doesn't allow another thing to move into that space, but the space doesn't change. When this planet is melted and gone away, empty space will still be there. The location. So don't think of empty space as some black thing in the sky. Okay, that's a mistake. Bhukhan namke kamyanos, said Vasubandhu, Master Vasubandhu. Bhukhan namke kamino means, oh, space means that black or blue thing over our heads. You know. And in the Abhidhamma Kosha, no means they say. Meaning, who could believe? You know, that's a dumb idea. Okay, space means, don't think of space. Space in Buddhism means place. How's that? Okay, empty space. All right, that never changes. So that would be a lume. That's not substantial. Okay, and then the lupos, things which do something, now that's substantial. You know, they have substance. Okay? That's the meaning of a substantial, in the second meaning of the term. Now here's a third one. Say, temba, mingyua. Temba, mingyua. As opposed to mitapa. Mitapa. Okay? Temba means stable. Mingyua means unchanging. Unaltering? How's that? And then mitapa means changing. Okay. People translate it as impermanent. I think we discussed it before why it might not be a good translation. When you talk about death and your own impermanence, in that case, chiwa mitapa is a good translation. But in philosophy, when you say permanent as opposed to impermanent, meaning something which lasts forever or doesn't last forever, that's not what it means. Okay? How should we say? Does the emptiness, does this pen last forever? No. So we say it's, in English we say it's impermanent. Okay? How about the emptiness of this pen? Does it last forever?
No.
No. When the pen is destroyed, the emptiness of the pen goes away. Okay? Goes out of existence. All right? So, would you call the emptiness of this pen permanent?
No.
So that's a demonstration that the word permanent is a bad translation for dhaka, or an impermanent is a bad translation for mitapa, because the emptiness of this pen is dhaka. Okay, it is what they use, the Tibetan word that they use to translate, that they translate as permanent. So that's a bad translation. So what it really means is unchanging. Okay, constant. Meaning the emptiness of this pen is totally constant. It's never less than 100%, not anything but your projection. Okay? And in that sense, it's dakpa, meaning unchanging. Does it go out of existence? Yes. Is it what we call permanent in English? No. Or eternal? No. Okay? You got to get used to that. Okay? Those of you who are translating, because otherwise you're going to hit this thing and it'll say the permanent emptiness of the pen goes out of existence. You know, and then you're going to be in trouble. Okay? All right. So that's the third meaning, is something which is stable and unaltering, as opposed to something which is changing constantly. Okay? That's almost the same as number two. Okay? Number two was stressing more that it either performed a function or didn't perform a function, that it did something or didn't do something. And then number three is more stressing that it either lasts for... almost made the same mistake. That it either changes, doesn't change at all, or changes constantly. Okay? Those are the... But in Buddhism, those are equal. Those sets are equal. Okay? Yeah. Say how? Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's a good point. Chilton brought up a good point. They actually reverse each other from two to three. In two, the functional things were substantial, which are actually the changing things. And in number three, it's the changing things that are insubstantial. Okay? So they actually reverse. That's a really good point. Okay? Number four. Say, Rankya. Tupa. Rankya. Tupa. As opposed to Denmin. Duje. Denmin. Duje. Okay. Rankya Tupa means, we had it last class. Rankya Tupa means self-standing, can stand on its own. And then Denmin Duje is just one example of something that doesn't stand on its own, okay? But it covers most of them. Rankya Tupa, there are two things that are described as self-standing. Physical matter, okay, is self-standing. And states of mind are self-standing. So mental stuff and physical stuff is self-standing according to the fourth idea of self-standing, of zeya, of substantial, okay? And then something that's not self-standing would be Denmin Duje. Denmin Duje is a code word for, you know, it's translated a million weird ways. All it means is stuff which is neither, changing stuff which is neither A nor B. Changing stuff which is neither A, doesn't have Denmin, okay, means doesn't den physical matter, and min, mental stuff. Okay. It neither possesses physical reality, physical matter, nor is it min, a state of mind. But it's still a duje, which means a changing thing, okay? A functioning thing, something that does something. Duje literally means factor, meaning something which affects another thing. So how many things in the world affect another thing but are neither physical nor mental? Concepts. Okay? Concepts are like that. Like Anne. Okay? Like Marie. Alright? Is Marie Placide physical? Purely physical. You see what I mean? Is Marie Placide mental? Purely mental. You know? Or is Marie Placide a concept that we apply to something physical and something mental? You see what I mean? So it's the concept. Concepts are called Denmin Duje. Changing things, but they aren't fully physical or wholly mental. You see, Denmin, okay? And that's the meaning of that. Yeah.
But aren't concepts not changing?
She says, aren't concepts things that don't change? Depends on what school you're in. Okay. Generally speaking, here we're talking about concepts that change. Okay. So we're not talking about the idea, Marie. We're talking about the thing we call Marie. How's that? And there's a distinction, all right? Does Marie change? Yes. Of course. Does quote Marie change?
No.
You see, there's a distinction there, and you have to think about it. Yeah? The person, Tashi as a person changes. You know, he gets older. Tashi's getting older, okay? But quote Tashi, the concept Tashi, the idea, the idealization of Tashi is different. And then we're playing between schools, okay? Different schools have different ideas. Generally, most schools accept a thing called Demenduche, which could be, a person would be in there, person. The person would be in there. The idealization of the person would not be a Demenduche. Okay. These are mainly the Sutra school, but it would also be accepted by the higher schools. Okay. And I think even the Abhidharma school, you could say, but each of the schools has a little bit idea how much stuff you throw in there. All right, that's a little bit different. Like we are Chitsens, we are Rangtens. That's a whole different thing. Okay. So that's another example. Now we go to the fifth one. This is a special idea about substantial and not substantial, okay? Like, Geshe Thubten Rinpoche gave the example of American guy. American guy. If you want to think of someone as an American guy, do you have to think of something else first? To perceive American guy, do you have to perceive something else before you do that? And he would say yes. And we said what? He said his head, his hands, his eyes, his nose, his ears. You know, you take all these pieces in your mind and then you put them together, you composite, and then you call it American guy. Okay, so you can't just open your eyes and say American guys. First you have to examine the eyes, the ears, the nose, and you know, all the pieces. And then you put it together and then you label it American guy, okay? That would be something which is not substantial. And something substantial would be, I think an example would be colors. You know, like you don't have to piece together colors. You just open your eyes and it's blue. You see what I mean? And that would be somehow more substantial. And that's another meaning of this word.
So it's colors and shapes?
You could say, I believe they would say most physical objects are like that, are like substantial, because you don't have to sit there and conceptualize to perceive them, okay? You don't have to like glue it together from other parts or something like that. And that would be the difference between substantial and constructed, okay? Zeya and Danya. Okay. By the way, the text says, Chanke Rupi Dorji says, cross out number 5 here and call it 4B. Because he says that's what they mean when they said 4. Got it? What was number 4? Yeah, self-standing. He says self-standing means that. And that's the only one that really means substantial or insubstantial. Okay, he says this, what we just said, is the real meaning of substantial and insubstantial. And the others are things that they call substantial and insubstantial, but that's not the real meaning of the word. The real meaning of the word is this one. Does it stand on its own or not? And what does that mean, stand on its own or not? It means, to perceive it, do you have to perceive other things first? Then it would be insubstantial. If you don't have to perceive other things first, it's substantial. Okay? And that's the meaning. Chanyi Rupi Dorje says, this is the real meaning of the word. And those other three are like imposters. Okay, so change 4 to 4A, change 5 to 4B. And that's the real meaning of substantial. Which one of these 4.5 meanings, okay, is the one that the independent group was saying is wrong when you think about a person? Obviously wrong. Okay. They said a person is not substantial. And if you perceive that, you've perceived sort of an elementary kind of selflessness. You know, like, not very subtle kind of selflessness. It didn't even qualify in the top 3, right? It didn't qualify in the 3 degrees of emptiness. Which one of these, trick question, okay, is it that you see that a person is not when you see some kind of selflessness according to this school. Which one do you guess? 4B or 4A and 4B are the same thing. Get used to that, okay? 4B is what 4A means. Okay. So, is it like a big spiritual step forward to realize that to perceive a person you have to perceive their parts mentally? Or is it a big spiritual step forward to perceive that a person is or isn't functioning? Or is it a big step forward to perceive that a person exists or doesn't exist? Or is it a big step forward to perceive that a person changes or doesn't change? None of the above, okay? None of the above. And the last part of your reading that you're going to get tonight from Tuesday says, Chagyurupa Dorje says, oh, and by the way, when the independent group says that substantial things don't exist, and that's a basic kind of selflessness, they're talking about a fifth flavor of substantial. They mean substantial in a whole new way that we didn't cover yet. Okay, I mean, Chagyurupa Dorje is cool, because after all that, there's a little footnote at the bottom that says, by the way, when the middle way lower school, right, the middle group in the middle way school, which is called the independent, when they say a person is not substantial, and you better understand that, and that's the very kindergarten step of understanding selflessness, they don't mean any of the above. They mean something different. Okay, they even use the word rangyatupa. They even use the word self-standing. And they don't mean that in the same way. They don't mean it in the way that everybody else means it. They mean it in a whole new way. Okay? And here's what they mean. Okay? And if you don't, what's the use of knowing this stuff? By the end of tonight, we'll demonstrate that if you understand real emptiness according to the highest school, you can reach tantric enlightenment. And if you don't, you can't. Okay? So you better know all the wrong ideas about emptiness. You know, this has been a whole course in the wrong ideas about emptiness. And you better know them, you know? Because then the next time you hear somebody get up and say, oh, lack of substantiality to myself is emptiness. And you say, ah, come on, that doesn't even qualify as mine only, you know? Okay? With authority you can say that. You can pull out your notebook and everything. Okay. Here's the last meaning of it. Yeah, this is the one they're canceling when they talk about the emptiness of this. You see what I mean? Oh, sorry. I figured everybody knew Tibetan by now. Say Wang. Jirwapo. Wang. Jirwapo. Tell me what the word gyur means. Gyur. Yeah, that's gyu. Gyur. To become. In a different spelling. Okay? It can mean change. In a different spelling. In this spelling, it can mean translate. For example, to change in the sense of change words or change languages, right? You know, who's the gegyur of this person means, who's his translator? Gegyur means language changer, language exchanger, okay? But then a gyur has a whole other meaning in it, you should know it. What's a korlu gyurwe gyalpo? Korlu gyurwe gyalpo. Huh? It's in the mandala, actually. All that stuff belongs to the Korlu Gyurwe Gyalpo. Yeah, a wielding emperor. And wielding is a bad translation of gyurwa, which means empowered by the wheel. Gyurwa means to have power, to be empowered. How does he draw his strength from? Where does he draw his strength from? His flying saucer, right? How far can it go in a day? 500,000 miles. How wide is it? 2,000 miles or something like that. I mean, it's big, okay? It fits like thousands and thousands of troops inside, and he gets inside and flies to other continents and controls them, and therefore he's called Chakravartin, he who controls with the wheel, and the wheel is his spaceship, okay? And it can be golden or bronze or silver, and there's a big thing about it, okay? You have to read your mandala offering text, okay? Then you get the dimensions of it and how many people can fit in and how many elephants, you know, and stuff like that, okay? So Girwa here means to be empowered. Wang Girwa Po means the person who directs the show, okay? Wang Girwa Po means the one who has the power, the one who's in charge, okay? And isn't that what we talked about last class, right? As the very most obvious lack of a self. Come on, there's nobody in charge of your body who's independent of your body and mind, right? You gotta throw that in. Who doesn't directly depend on your body and mind. But you think there is. Will that shirt be on your body tomorrow? Do you have control of this shirt? And this is a whole funny thing about ownership, right? Very, very interesting. Do you own that shirt? Do you own the blouse or shirt that you have on right now? Do you own it? Yeah. Why? Because I can do what I want with it. I mean, that's a test of ownership. I can't rip up your blouse or shirt because I don't own it. If it was mine, I could spill whatever I wanted on it. And you can call me stupid, but it's mine. I can do what I want with it. So the meaning of mine, that I own it, right, own, right, is the owner, is that I can do what I want with it. But you can't tell me if you'll have that shirt tomorrow, you know? You literally can't tell me if you will own that shirt tomorrow. You know, someone could mug you coming out of here, somebody could steal it from your house. You might be dead and in another realm by tomorrow. You telling me you own it? Well, what does own mean if it doesn't mean that? Can you control its usage? Can you control its location up to 30 minutes from now? No. It's funny, but we have that concept. That's the most obvious form of a self that doesn't exist. It doesn't even make it into the debate, you see. It's so obvious. Of course you don't have power with that. Of course there's no such thing as the owner of the body and the mind, okay? Or he's a real schlock, you know, he can't do anything at all. He can't even guarantee you're going to have it on in half an hour, you know? And so there is no such person, okay? That's just so obvious it doesn't even count as a kind of emptiness to realize that guy's not there, okay? The driver. Who's driving your body and mind, who controls your body and mind and your shirt. Okay? Okay? Alright? Forget that one. That's so obvious, that's not emptiness to realize that. You see what I mean? It's helpful. It's humbling. Okay? But it's not emptiness. Okay? It's just a fact which is not emptiness. Okay? Alright. So that's the one, says Changi Rupi Dorji, that they're talking about when the independents say no substantial person exists. Okay? So now when your friends ask you on the street, what does the independent group in the middle way school mean when they say there's no substantial self, even though they don't accept that the lack of that is true emptiness? And you'll say, you know, a guy who's in control of my body and mind and who's not part of my body and mind. You see what I mean? Some independent guy who's self-standing, driving me, my mind, okay? Me, my body, and my mind, okay? That one is what they think. The lack of that is the very gross or obvious lack of a self-nature to a self, and that's not true emptiness, okay? To repeat from last week, we had all these flavors of emptiness. I really wish you could rattle them off, but I won't ask again because it's embarrassing. And they're kind of hard for me to remember when I'm tired. Okay. Lack of a driver, basically. Okay. I'm sorry. That was the more subtle one. Yeah. Lack of an unchanging, permanent, eternal soul. The most obvious one. Okay. I just made a mistake. Okay. Lack of a eternal soul or something like that. Most obvious one. Okay. Lack of a driver. Okay. Lack of the fact that you and that your mind and the things it holds come from a different karmic seed, and lack of a fact that something could exist from its own side, through its own identity, without depending on your mind to see it. Okay, those are four flavors of selflessness in this school. I'll say it one more time. Get used to it. Lack of an eternal, unchanging, solitary, whole, little self. I think what I used to think of when I was a kid, when mom said, your soul will be there after you die, you know. I was like this little clear bubble. Okay? And then second one up, lack of a director who's independent of your body and mind, who's driving it around. Just because you hear your thoughts, you think there is such a thing, but it's not there. Okay? Third one, lack of any person whose mind could be coming from a separate karmic seed than everything that mind is seeing. Okay? And then last one, which in the independent group is the only real emptiness, lack of a self-nature of this pen, such that it has its own identity coming from its own side, without my mind cooperating in the mission, in the process. Okay? Whether my mind was here or not, to perceive it, and my unaffected state of mind, right, it could exist from its own side. Okay? By the way, they're halfway to Prasangika, right? They're halfway to the real truth. Okay, so you've got four flavors of selflessness. In that school, only the fourth one is emptiness. The fourth one, again, I'll repeat. A unique identity of the pen that could come from its own side without my mind cooperating from its side. You see what I mean? A pen that could exist with a nature from its own side without depending on my mind to perceive it also. Okay? Question. This is the question I wanted to get to when I started this whole thing. Which one does the mind-only school say is real emptiness? The third one. Okay? The third one. The fact that this pen is empty of any nature of being of a separate karmic seed from the visual consciousness which is perceiving it. Okay? They also say there's another kind of emptiness to this pen. What would that be? The fact that the pen is empty of being called a pen by definition. Okay, those are their two flavors of emptiness. You should be able to cruise around those six kinds of emptiness like nothing. Okay? You should understand those six kinds of emptiness is like no problem. I'll do them one more time. Okay? We'll start way back in the mind-only school. Okay? First one. I mean, let's give them little names that you remember. Okay? Who likes to talk about this one? Mind-only school. Do they say it's real 100% emptiness? They do. Okay. Equals emptiness. They got another flavor of emptiness. What's that? Subject and object, okay? Which school? We'll say mind-only now, okay? It's going to come later, right? And it is a real kind of emptiness, according to me. Number three. I'll make it easy, okay? I think what we think of as soul is the most obvious one. No, I don't like that one. Scratch it. Because you do have an internal mind stream. Okay, that's a little dangerous. Let's cancel that. No, unchanging. Little ball. So, okay. Something like that, okay. Alright, Dakchi Gwawan Tengi Dot. Okay, independent. Little thing inside you, okay? No such thing. No unchanging little ball of self. Okay. Visualize that and you got it right, okay? What school? I mean, lots of schools, but right now we're talking independence. And they say, obvious. Selflessness. Selflessness. Of a person. And by the way, this is the one you get the most in bad explanations of emptiness. You know, they didn't even get up to real middle way. Okay? I've heard very authentic, you know, very qualified people make very strange statements about emptiness. Okay? Like, very, very strange. I heard one really good scholar say, emptiness is the fact that when you feel yourself, it's not that, or something like that. And of course there's a self that exists. You know, Michael Roach exists, he's standing up here talking, you know, I feel him, he's real, you know. It's not that. That's not what we're denying at all. You know, the sense of a self is true. Of course you're yourself, you know. You function, you're there, you know. That's not what we're denying at all, okay? The Buddha has a sense of a self. The Dalai Lama thinks he's himself, you know, he is. Okay, all right, I think, okay. Number four. We're going to talk about substantial, you know. Substantial. Self-standing. We'll put here in parentheses, driver. Because that's, you know now, after that long spiel, that's what substantial means. No such thing. Substantial in the sense of an independent driver. Okay? Who's not part of your body and your mind, who's driving you around. Okay? A boss. A director. Okay? This is what school independent. By the way, some of these are shared by lower schools. I'm not getting into that, okay? Probably because I can't. Okay. Independent. This is the subtle. Yeah. Subtle. Lack of self. To people. Got it? Okay, number five. C, number. Peace, brother. Okay. C, number two. Okay? But the independent, you know? Okay? Same idea, basically. Okay? That the visual consciousness and the pen that it sees don't come from a different karmic seed. And that's the gross lack of a self to things. Last one. You get it? You get to have a cookie. I think there's cookies. I hope. Okay. What's that? That's a subtle lack of self to things, right? Subtle lack of self. You gotta be able to drive around these six like nobody's business, okay? If you're really gonna teach emptiness to people, you gotta teach them what's wrong in order to teach them what's right, okay? We haven't got to the right one, okay? In the whole 10 classes, we haven't got to the right one yet, okay? What's this one supposedly? No. This is it. Not exist from own side without unaffected mind. It takes the magician's spell and the dispelled state of mind for you to see the horse there. Okay? It's got to come from both sides. The stick has to be appearing as a horse, and your mind has to be under the influence of the spell. There has to be a cooperative effort. From the object side, there has to be appearance of something. From the state of mind side, there has to be seeing something. Okay? Neither one exists by itself. There has to be a cooperation between the two. Okay? This whole thing is the tree falling in the forest thing. Okay? The mind-only school would say what? Trees can fall in the forest and they exist. As soon as the sound comes from the tree, it exists. From its own side. Independent school, let's say, doesn't exist until somebody's sitting there hearing it fall down. That's a good example. Pasagika? There were some decibels, and you made it a tree sound. But were the decibels there before I thought of them as decibels? No. When you focus on them, they too become empty. You see what I mean? But when you're discussing the sound, you stand back from the raw material. You have the raw data, and you don't examine it. You just leave it there. Okay, there were some decibels. And my mind, my karma made me hear them as a tree fall. But what about those decibels? You know, this is Mrs. Rebush's question. Nick Rebush's mother in Australia actually came to my house, banged on the door, said, "What about the, you know, that talk you gave last night? You know, what about the decibels? You know, aren't they the same?" I said, "Yeah, when you focus on the decibels, then your karma is forcing you to see decibels from parts of decibels." Okay? You gotta get used to that. Okay? You gotta get used to that. But we're not gonna do that yet, because that's, yeah, it's an onion peeling thing. And until you get down to the next level, you leave the next level alone. It's there. Okay. And by the way, excuse me, that's very bad to not teach it clearly, because then people will get disoriented. They'll say nothing exists, nothing matters. Right? If you just say, "Oh, there's nothing there," and your mind is just making everything up, you know. Well, then a dream and a drug fantasy and real life becomes the same. You see what I mean? And that's not true. Okay? Yeah. Yeah, she said, explain unaffected state of mind. Basically, you can say one which is not on drugs. They would say, this is a careful point. They say unaffected by temporary causes of error, meaning alcohol, drugs, moving in a train in a certain way so that the trees look like they're walking or something like that. You see, those are all called temporary. Chalkitrugyu. Chalkitrugyu means short-term causes of error. But Pukitrugyu, you know, your tendency to see things as self-existent, your mind is always affected by that. So unaffected doesn't cover those kinds of effects. See, when we say unaffected, we mean by, you know, short-term causes like drugs and alcohol and extreme jealousy that makes you see something that's not there or something like that. Okay? Yeah. But it doesn't, unaffected doesn't mean free of ultimate factors that cause your mind to be screwed up, which is your own ignorance that you came, the baggage that you carried here from your past life. Yeah.
So when you look,
she says, when you look at decibels and parts of decibels, does it infinitely regress? Yes. Because when you look for the thing that gets the name, and you're not satisfied with leaving it alone and keep digging, you don't find anything. Okay. And that's a sign in Prasangika that you've found emptiness. Does that mean nothing exists or nothing matters? Absolutely not. The minute you understand emptiness, you gotta be strictly moral, strictly ethical. Okay? It means you do have to be ethical, okay? But if you stop at the onion skin thing and keep going down and in the middle there's nothing, you know, and you just go home, you say, "Okay, guys, go home." You know, it's breaking a bodhisattva vow. You're not telling them what's important to tell them. Whether you see an onion or an apple depends on your karma. Okay? And who wants to be surrounded by onions all the time? I mean, personally. You know, okay? All right? You have to give them the second half. So you have to go home and keep your bodhisattva vows. You have to go home and keep your books. You will become a tempting deity. You know what I mean? You got to tell them that stuff. It's very bad to leave them with the onion that's nothing in the middle. Okay? Yeah. Sorry? Yeah, that would sound like, yeah. In Prasangika they say nothing exists substantially, and that's what they mean. That's true. We could put that as number 6. But we were in the independent school at that time. 10 minutes ago we were in the independent school. Okay. Jesu Drupa, to exist substantially, is the gacha in the higher school. Yeah. It's what we deny when we speak of emptiness. It's one of the synonyms for emptiness. And I put in your reading a really cool section from the monastic textbook that gives you all the synonyms for self-existence. Substantial, natural, by definition, from its own side, ultimately. You know, all that stuff is very beautiful. And then he says, by the way, the independent school doesn't agree with this one, this one, this one. And the minority school doesn't agree with this one, this one, this one. And it's very cool. You won't find it anyplace else, but in the Sarame Yikshas. Okay. Probably. Okay. Have a break, and then when we get back, we'll talk about. We'll finish off with the highest school. Okay. You're going to be getting tonight a schedule of ACI stuff through the next year, the whole next year. Okay, up to the time of the 3-year retreat. So, literal or figurative? The dates are pretty much fixed because a lot of them involve travel. Arrangements that have been made in other countries. So, you know, it's a really, really nice schedule. We're going to end up doing stuff. There's a tour of the Far East. We were asked to go back to Australia and then the Far East. So it'll be Singapore, Taiwan, probably Tokyo, and Perth, Australia, on the west side of Perth, west side of Australia. And then the FPMT, Lama Sopa's organization, has asked us to do a tour of their centers in Southern Asia. So that'll be, we'll be going to Bodh Gaya and doing the Diamond Cutter in Bodh Gaya, which I think is really powerful. And then Dharamsala and Kathmandu. And then after that's all done, we plan to go down to Saramay and get the second half of this course, which is the Madhyamika half. He's an incredible teacher, Geshe Thich Nhat Hanh. I mean, we asked him, how long have you been doing this? He said, 30 years, but I did take a 3-day break once. You know? And he teaches, he has hundreds of students, and he's actually given us the time, committed to do that. And it's amazing. It's really amazing to get it from the source, you know? Then there'll be a tour of Ireland, which all the Irish Buddhist Secret Association has to come, okay? Okay, Sykes? Okay. I don't know if you're going to make it or no. He's a big secret. All right. And then a bunch of, there'll be North Carolina, Washington, D.C., California, a couple other places. Okay. Reading 10 you're going to get at the review class. Okay. And now we'll go over what that is. All right. By the way, the reason to give you the schedule is so you can schedule next year. We'll be reviewing the 7 years in 1 year, and it'll be really cool. You can get the whole Geshe course instead of doing 18 years or 7 years. You can do 1 year. All right, and it'll be a really nice review of the whole thing. If you hope to get your final certificate from ACI, you have to come to the review. Okay, so we just tried to give you that so you could plan your life for next year. I don't think the dates of the courses will change much. Oh, by the way, we'll also be going to Indiana in August for His Holiness's Kala Chakra. And Ken Rinpoche will be giving his initiation a little bit earlier next year in August. It'll be early August. So those are because he can't do it during while His Holiness is here. Okay? All right. If His Holiness is giving the Kala Chakra in the United States, Ken Rinpoche won't. All right, we're on to the Prasangika. And we'll do it, you've had this many times, but we'll do it kind of, say, Tengyuwa. Tengyuwa means Prasangika. As we said last class, their name comes from a special kind of logical device. It's a kind of formal logic, and it's the sarcastic absurdity, you know. So I said, did you really think this pen came from its own side? And that's a tengyuwa, okay? Rangani duba yimba ta, okay? Rangani duba yimba ta, okay? And you end it with the word tao. Tao means come on. Are you saying it's coming from its own side? And they named that school, you know, the absurd consequences of what you just said, okay? Prasangika means that. Prasangika is a kind of logic. This school believes that just based on that, you can get a pretty good idea of what emptiness is. Come on, you really think this thing's coming from its own side? So a dog sees it like that? Come on. You know? And I didn't sit there and say, by the way, it doesn't come from its own side, and this is why, and blah, blah, blah. You just give somebody a tengyuwa, prasangika, okay? And they can pretty much get it from that. Is that their main viewpoint? No. But they're given that name for that reason. Okay? Excuse me? Okay, so that's the meaning of Prasangika. This is the ultimate viewpoint of emptiness, okay? This is what Lord Buddha believed, really, literally, okay? This is what Nagarjuna taught, this is what Chandrakirti taught, this is what all the Dalai Lamas have taught, this is what Jetsun Kapa taught, this is what Ken Rinpoche teaches. This is what all of tantric practice is based on. Okay, so this is it. All right, really. Okay. Last time Lord Buddha said that, it wasn't the case, right? Third turning of the wheel, right? This is what I really meant. No, this is not definitely not figurative. Okay, this is literal. Really, you need to know this, and you can prove it to yourself in your own mind by the end of tonight, which will not be too long from now. Okay, so. In your own mind, you can establish it. Why? Because it makes very good sense that if you want to reach a tantric deity's body in paradise in this lifetime, this viewpoint is very, very compelling. This viewpoint, this explanation of emptiness, is something that's very, very logical and makes sense, you know, that I could do it. If that's the way things are, I can do it. You see what I mean? And you'll get that sense tonight. And they are. It is the highest viewpoint, okay? And if someone teaches you a different viewpoint, it's wrong. Okay? I mean, maybe they're doing it for a good reason, maybe they have some other motivation in mind, but it is not the ultimate viewpoint that will save you or cause you not to die in this lifetime. Okay? And the subject we're gonna base it on is called Say Chumbap. Chumbap. Okay. Chumbap is a special section from Chandrakirti's explanation of Nagarjuna's root wisdom, okay? It's called Chumbap. Chumbap means waterfall or a river that's falling down these rocks, you know, and flowing out to sea, okay? Chu means water, bap means to fall. And Chumbap means like a stream making its way to the ocean, okay? Chumbap. It comes from a very famous quotation that says, if a hungry ghost, right, a preta, what I like to call them, what do I call it? Craving spirits, because that's their nature. Hungry doesn't quite catch it. Craving means, because they were cheapskates in this life, they're always short of stuff. You know, they always need something. They always want something, and they never quite get what they want. They are afflicted by hunger and thirst often, and they when they see some water and they run to the stream, the side of the stream, and they look down, they just suddenly it has become pus and blood. It's this disgusting slime that no one would ever want to drink. You see, that's their karma. See, as they approach from a distance, they see this beautiful running water. I mean, this happens all day, right, in New York City. You know, sounds like a good offer, and then you get closer, it's like, whoa. So anyway, you get to the side of the water, and then you look down, and suddenly it has become something else, okay? And this is taught in the monastic textbooks in the following way. And I always picture it in the basement at 39th Street, which is maybe an appropriate place, since that's where we started the 7 years, okay? With six students, all right? And there's this dark basement, and three beings have been sitting around a table playing poker, okay? There's one hungry ghost, there's one human, and there's one deity, worldly deity, okay? Or you can call it a tantric deity, doesn't matter. But there's three beings from three different realms sitting around a table, okay? Like E.T. or something, you know, the bar scene or something, you know? Like they're really strange, three different, totally different beings, okay? First of all, is it possible that two realms can be going on in one room at the same time? We talked about it Friday night. I mean, to a dog, this is a whole different realm. It's a whole different level of reality. And it can coexist with our level of reality. Whose is right? Be fair to animals, okay? Animal rights, okay? Their reality is just as real as yours, okay? And it's running parallel. So the idea of parallel different realities didn't start with Carlos Castaneda, okay? There are at least two realities running in this room at the same time. No problem with that. It's not like some deep philosophical thing, okay? Once you admit to two, you might as well admit to five or 10 or 20. You know what I mean? In theory, there could be many, many different realities going on in the same space at the same time. Totally different realities. So in Chumba, in Majjhimika, Prasangika, explanation of emptiness. Don't forget now we've changed hats, okay? We're Prasangika now. We're consequence school. Consequence meaning absurd consequence of what you just said. Come on. Okay? The consequence school, put on their hat now. They say it's possible. Three beings are sitting around the table and someone walks in with a glass of liquid. Okay? Someone walks in with a glass of liquid and sets it down in the middle of the table. One glass. Sets it down in the middle of the table. Okay? You can use also a cylinder. Okay? In Majjhimika, the reason I chose this reading, which also appears in Course 5, okay, I copped it. The reason I chose this reading is because to me, it's the most appropriate thing to make the last thing that we teach in the 7-year course, okay? To me, this is Majjhimika in a nutshell. To me, this is the most important piece of reading that you could ever have, okay? Somebody comes in and sets a glass of liquid on the table between these three. This is, and the thing about the pen, I just want you to be sensitive to that. I didn't make it up. This is Majjhimika, Prasangika, Chumbap section, Chandrakirti, explaining Nagarjuna, who's explaining Lord Buddha. Okay, and it is the viewpoint of emptiness accepted by all the highest beings who have ever lived. Okay, if you see emptiness directly, you are seeing it this way. And you can only see it this way. And the middle way explanation of three different degrees of emptiness is totally wrong. Okay, there aren't no degrees of emptiness. It's either emptiness or it's not emptiness, and there's no degrees of it. Is there a difference between the emptiness of the parts of a person and the emptiness of a person? Yes, we agree to that in Prasangika. But only because the thing that the emptiness applies to changes. Not because one is more empty than the other. Okay? They're both 100% empty. One happens to be applying to Jehan. One happens to be applying to Jehan's hand, Jehan's arm, Jehan's head, okay? But are they like different degrees of emptiness? No, okay? So you gotta get that. We agree that there's two flavors of emptiness depending on where the emptiness is sticking to, okay? But not like one of them is different from the other or more empty than the other. We don't accept that, okay? And so that's a big difference. Here we're rejecting the idea of Dhammitariksum. Dhammitariksum, that there's three flavors, three degrees of subtlety in emptiness. We don't accept that. It's all 100% emptiness or it's not emptiness, okay? So three guys are sitting around the table. And they're all looking at this liquid, okay? One of them, according to the scripture, sees water. And that makes them a human, okay? That's what it is to be a human. And then another one is sitting there and they're a craving spirit, hungry ghost, and they see pus and blood. In the same glass. Same thing, okay? I didn't make it up, okay? It's great comfort to me that you know I didn't make it up, okay? Because it's the most important thing I ever said in this class, okay? Then the third person is this deity, and they see the nectar of immortality. One sip of that, you're out of here forever, you know? And amrita, okay? Dutsi. And that's it, you're out of here. If you take one sip of that, everything's finished, okay? And three different beings are seeing three different things. Then there's this huge debate. I mean, the reading is like 30 pages. I don't know how many pages, but... And half of it is very difficult. I mean, don't get frustrated, okay? The principle you understand. And there's some details in there which are very, very subtle and difficult to prove and stuff like that. So don't worry about that. But the question, first question is, are they all having valid perceptions? And by the way, that's why we say valid rather than correct. Valid meaning, given the data at their disposal and the brains that they have, is what they're seeing valid? Yeah, so from that sense, it's correct. Okay, it is blood to a preta, it is water to the human, and it is dutsi to the deity, okay, to the tantric deity. Okay, it is. It really is. Okay, can one thing be three things at once? Not to one mind stream, but if you have three different mind streams, yes. Okay, And that's proof that it's not coming from its own side. Okay? If you want a classic example, your favorite song is a good example. Okay? Almost nobody else agrees with you. Okay? I mean, probably you really like the people who do agree with you. Okay? But that's it. The song is not the best song in the world from its own side. Okay? It's the best song in the world because of what you think. All right? That's a perfect example of emptiness. You don't have to go to black spaces to get to emptiness. Your favorite song is a perfect example. That's why you have fights with other people about music. That's why people hate critics. Okay? Okay. I'll go through your homework. The abbreviation of the greater way says that, quote, each being according to their class, meaning were you born as a human, were you born as an animal, etc., has differing perceptions of a single thing, and that therefore, quote, we can say that these things have no reality. Does this mean then that we should never consider anything to be one way or another? Why or why not? And this is discussed in the reading. Okay, Kachigma, an opponent comes up and says, well, if the liquid can be three different things at once, then nothing is better than another thing. You see what I mean? Then nothing is different from anything else, really. It's all just the way you see it. Okay? And then we say, not quite. Okay? And the example given in there is, are there certain ways of looking at reality that function better than other ways? Yeah, there are. You see what I mean? Things still function, even though they're empty. You've got to get used to that. Things can be more functional or more useful than other ways of looking at things. You know, is it valid to look at the world as full of creepy people who are out to get you? Yeah, in a certain way, if that's your state of mind. Is it valid to say that maybe any particular person you might run into, even if they treat you badly, is trying to help you? Is it valid? Yes. Which is more useful? Which is more pleasant? Which gives you more karma, you know? Which actually leads you to enlightenment, you know? The second one, okay? So one is more useful than the other. Things can still be more functional than other things. Okay? Yeah? He's basically saying that if doing good deeds is done in an illusion-like atmosphere, then why would that be necessarily more functional or useful than something else? It all boils down to the purpose of Buddhism, which is to escape pain. You know what I mean? Constantly thinking of things in a positive light. If a person misunderstood, you know, didn't see things quite this way, didn't explain things quite this way, but were imagining themselves to be an illusion, and purposely followed exactly the same moral code, but thinking that I'm in an illusion and I'm doing it, you know, in an illusion, and they were misunderstanding what Buddhists mean by illusion. I guess you could say it this way. If someone followed a perfect moral code because they thought, for example, there was a God watching them, and was keeping score or something. But if they kept the same moral code that, you know, all the way up to their tantric vows that anyone else would keep, would they get the same results? You see what I mean? It's unlikely that they could sustain it. Buddhism says it's unlikely that you can sustain it under a delusion like that. You see what I mean? At some point you would break down. You know, at some point, really understanding how things work gives you the ability to sustain it to the end. And a belief in some other belief, you know, I can see Moses sitting down and saying, you know, gee, if I tell them the truth about karma and emptiness, half these guys aren't going to get it. Let's tell them there's this big daddy, you know, your father up in the sky and he's keeping track. And yeah, that's useful. They say, what do you call it? Deva Jedam, you know. I mean, they're doing their good deeds out of a semi-correct understanding and a semi-false understanding of reality. And they have a certain energy and a certain... It's very slow. It's very unstable. It's very likely to stop before you get to the final goal. I mean, in the end, I believe you would have to say that you need to perceive emptiness to sustain it. You have to have Prasangika viewpoint to sustain it to get to tantric enlightenment. You'd have to. Okay? And it's much, much quicker if you understand the process. You know, if you're purposely doing everything... If you're purposely keeping your morality because you understand exactly how it works, it gives you the energy to keep your morality in a way that no one else can do. That's what the scriptures would say, and I think that's true. Okay, that's the perfection of wisdom, by the way. That's what it means to do your good deeds, knowing exactly why and exactly how it works. And apparently, it's only that kind of knowledge that can sustain it until you finally turn into a tantric deity. Okay. Okay. So, does this mean that we should never consider one thing one way or the other? No. And an example is what? Well, there's some philosophical viewpoints that work, and some that don't. Okay. I mean, people tend to say, it's not PC for me to get up here and say, some philosophical viewpoints some religious viewpoints don't work. Okay, they don't ultimately work. They really don't work. And people say, that's not, you're being sectarian, you know. Everyone says that. All fanatics say that. You know, mine is the only way. But I answer you just one way. I mean, consider the possibility that as in the physical world, you know, like, can you take the parts of a car engine and just randomly put them back together and will it work? You know? And are there 10,000 ways you can put a car engine back together? And is it true that 9,999 of them don't work? You see, I mean, it can look good. It can look like a car engine. It can have all the parts there and it looks pretty cool. And it just won't work at all. You see what I mean? It can have some renunciation. It can have some teachings about compassion. It can have some idea about emptiness. It can have some talk about, doing good deeds. It can have some, you know, people, that's a very common viewpoint. You know, this spiritual path is okay because, you know, it has a lot of good things in it. You know, that's like saying a car engine will work because it has all the parts in the wrong order or not fixed together or a couple of them missing, or the odds are similar. Okay? I consider the possibility that in the spiritual world it works the same as in the automotive world. I mean, I'm not kidding. Consider the possibility that if you don't have certain concepts there, as a whole, you won't get to the end. You won't get there. You know? I mean, consider the possibility. I'm not being fanatic. I'm not trying to say one thing is better than the other. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, consider the possibility that spiritual mechanisms work just as precisely as a car engine. And you must have certain elements there or you'll never make it. Okay? And there are many things that are sweet and good and holy and pure and interesting and are missing an essential part and will not get you there. Okay? It's possible. Yeah. Yeah, she says, would it get you up a level? Come on, you guys are Chang'e scholars. You tell me. Of course. Yeah. Should we, you know, wipe them all out from the face of the earth, those guys who are teaching incomplete paths? No, for God's sake, they could be Buddhas. They probably are Buddhas. You've got to be very careful. But since you're in this class, why not go to the one that works, you know? Go straight up to the one that works. They say go straight up to compassion and wisdom. You know, you can mess around on the lower tracks. Go straight to compassion and wisdom. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah, and I think it's very important to be. I mean, from a tantric point of view, the sutra stuff is so slow. You could almost say it doesn't work. You know what I mean? And then you'd be saying Lord Buddha's a dummy or something like that. You know what I mean? You gotta be careful. You gotta be very careful. Lord Buddha taught many things as Taptul was the opening lines of this class, you know, in because these are very clever ways of leading people farther than they were before. Okay, yeah.
Would you say that no other traditions get off the wheel?
Would I say that no other tradition can get you off the wheel? I don't know. I would say that you have to, if you press me, you must see emptiness directly to get off the wheel. Must. And the day you see emptiness directly, you can confirm what I'm claiming here. Directly. You see your future lives. You see the day of your enlightenment. Then you don't have to ask me in the class, you know, are there other traditions or something like that? I mean, it's, consider the possibility and then work towards it. You know what I mean? On the day that you see your enlightenment directly, right after you've seen emptiness directly, meaning on the day you see the four Arya truths, okay? You will see all this stuff directly. I mean, I'm just saying it's possible, okay? I'm not saying you don't get to leave here if you don't accept it, okay? I'm just saying it's actually the way it is, okay? And I'm not ashamed to say it, and it's correct. And you must see it. You must see emptiness directly. Then you won't have to ask me any of these questions. You know, you will be absolutely sure yourself. And there's no other question about it, but you must see emptiness directly. You cannot see emptiness directly if you don't meditate about an hour a day and study emptiness seriously. Okay? You can't play piano well if you don't practice it. They are about the same level of difficulty. And the likelihood that you could play at Carnegie Hall without ever practicing and seeing emptiness without meditating an hour a day are very similar. Okay? It's totally unlikely. Maybe it happened once, you know. Madonna made it to Carnegie Hall. And that, you know. Yeah. Which scholars do you refer to?
The other schools.
She said the question was: are you saying that all great thinkers of Buddhism in the past who taught the other school systems, are you saying that none of them saw the emptiness directly, and were describing it? The question comes up about Arya Sangha, who was the great revigorator of the mind-only school. Okay, and people say, did he see emptiness directly? They say, yeah, of course. Arya Asanga, please. Okay? Okay, Arya means someone who's seen emptiness directly. Well, did he see emptiness directly? Yes. How could he if he was stuck in the mind-only school? He wasn't stuck in the mind-only school. He taught it out of compassion for people who couldn't get up to the Prasangika. From his own viewpoint, it's Prasangika. And in many places, he says, I'm reporting the mind-only school system. Master Vasubandhu in the last pages of the Abhidharma Kosha says, I'm reporting the Vaibhashika school, you know. And Jetsun Kapa at the end of this book, which you're about to get to, says, ask me who I am, ask me what system I like, the one that gets you to enlightenment, the Prasangika. Okay, and he's going to say that. All right. So, and I'm not going to press on it more, I'm not going to, you know, insist anything. I'm saying, on the day you see emptiness directly, all things will be known. You can reach that. You have to try. Okay? All right. Number three. Oh, these are questions. Okay. The mind-only school has asserted that things can exist from their own side through some unique identity of their own. The independent part of the middle-way school has asserted that the perception of things depends on their appearing from their own side to a state of mind which from its side is unerring. So it's a cooperation, right? So in the mind-only school system, it's out there and it's existing towards me. In the independent school system, it's existing towards me and I'm cooperating, and somewhere in between we make a pen. Okay? All right? Both things have to be there, like in the magician, like in the example. By the way, the thing about the magician, it's not so much the falsity of it, it's more of an example for how perception happens. There has to be a horse appearing from the stick, and you have to have your mind under a spell, and then you can see a horse. Okay, that's the point of that example, on that level. Okay, so how does the consequence part of the middle way school assert that things exist? Okay, what's the Prasangika say? Here's what they say. There's only two pieces of Tibetan in this whole homework. You'll be very grateful. Say tope. Par taktam. Tope. Par taktam. This is the way everything is according to Madhyamika Prasangika. Okay? This is the way everything exists. This is in fact the meaning of dependent origination. Okay? Dokpa means by your projections. Forced on you by your past karma. Okay? Par means from your side. Par means from your side. It's been a long way from the mind-only school that said things existed from their side. Okay? Now we got from your side. Par means from your side. Taktam means just labels, just creations, just constructs. Things that you have created through your projections. Coming from your side. Okay? That's all. That's how all things exist. All things exist merely through your projections, coming from your side. Okay. So is there a cylinder out there? Yeah, leave it alone and there's a cylinder. You know, don't dig into it and there's a cylinder. And then you can call it a pen. Okay. But then when you focus on the cylinder, you're actually focusing on two pieces that you're calling a cylinder. And when you focus on the top, you're actually focusing on two pieces that you call the top. You see what I mean? And it keeps going like that. Right? But don't mistake that for saying nothing exists. Okay? Okay? Don't mistake that. You know, relatively speaking, nominally speaking, there is a cylinder out there, and I'm thinking of it as a pen. Because I'm a human. Okay? Because my karma is making me see it that way. That's all. But be careful not to go into some extreme and say, oh, Michael Rhodes said the cylinder also didn't exist. So I guess the parts of, and onion skin, and you get the mill and there's nothing, you know, I don't know what to do. You know, it's like Cheerios, you know. You know, like that. It's not like that, okay? It's not like that. All we're saying is that something appears, you call it something, okay, forced by your karma to do so. And that's how everything exists. Okay. Next question on your homework says, well, one of the next questions says, well, when we say that things are only projections, does that mean we can make anything we want it to be? If this is just my projection, can I make this a $100 bill? If it's just my projection, why not? Yeah, forced upon you by your past karma. Okay. Can you go to the dentist and wish it to feel like cotton candy? When they hit your nerve, when they do a, what do they call those things? Root canal. You know, can you, by wanting it to feel that way, make it feel that way? Another version would be, when I was a child, and I'm not being critical, I'm just saying, you know, go to the church, sit down on your knees, and pray that your aunt doesn't die. You see what I mean? It's a very similar thing. It's exactly the same thing. You know, you can't, they are your projections. You can't change them by just wishing it, or nobody would ever have any pain. But we can't control pain, so obviously things don't work that way. Yeah. He says, if everything is a projection, then karma itself is a projection. Right. And your projections would also be projections. That's correct. Emptiness has its own emptiness. Okay. Emptiness also. Your current understanding of emptiness is that forced on you by your past deeds, which is why Tibetans who are about to start their Majjhimika studies, like Ken Rinpoche, went up in a cave and meditated big time and did very holy practices to try to purify themselves. You know, they're trying to purify their karma so they can project emptiness to be what it is. You see what I mean? And he almost died. I mean, he got very ill and did a good job, you know, purifying himself. So that actually, between the course on independent school and the course on Prasangika school, meaning after your 12th year and before the next 4 years, you actually stop and go do some kind of holy practices so that your karma can improve, that you're projecting a better understanding of emptiness. Okay? No problem. Just don't ask me, can karma change then, the rules of karma, because I get nervous when you ask that. Okay. Next one. Does the fact that things are only projections mean that leading an ethical way of life is unimportant? I mean, anybody who's studied emptiness at all, especially in these classes, better giggle, okay? And I hope it doesn't mean that when lectures are being given throughout New York explaining why you can misbehave to your heart's content if everything's empty, that you'll giggle, you know, right in the middle of the guy's tantric explanation. You don't care. Figurative, right? Figurative, right? Okay? Not at all like that. Okay? The more empty things are, the more ethical you have to be. And you know why, and I don't have to go into it, okay? You've had this, I've been feeding you Prasangika for years, okay? So it should just seem like, oh yeah, that's easy. Okay, number 7. Why does the consequence presentation of the meaning of emptiness have especially important implications in our own search for enlightenment? This is a very important question. Yeah. Why does the Prasangika presentation have special meaning in your personal life, in your own search for enlightenment? She says you're the only one that can clean up your act. But I'm talking about their presentation of emptiness, as opposed to the other presentations we've had. She says it's the only correct one. Would you realize how absurd your position is falling on? Actually, it's like this. She says the only one to get you out. But why? You see, the other ones are not emptiness. The other ones are not really emptiness. If that cylinder had any penness about it, whether it was a penness that came from its own side or whether it was a penness that we had to do 50-50, you know, then I'm stuck with a pen forever. You see? If my body has any nature of being a wrinkly, balding, freckly, hairy arm thing, from its own side, whether it's 50% that way or 100% that way, I'm stuck here. I can never become a Buddha. I can never reach tantric enlightenment. You see what I mean? If their viewpoints are correct, you is in trouble. You know? If things have the least bit of existence from their own side, you're in big trouble. You can't get out. You're going to die like that. Okay? I mean, it's very profound. You must see that this is the meaning of emptiness. You know, those other the other ones don't work. You know, if it's true that you have any kind of self-existence, if those explanations of emptiness are at all correct, the six that we went through, right? If they have anything correct about them, you are stuck here forever, because it's coming from its own side. You can't change it. You know, it's not your projection. You can't change it by being good or something like that. Okay? Then why did Lord Buddha spend 25 years teaching people to be good and 25 years teaching them to be empty if there wasn't some connection? You see what I mean? Why? You see what I mean? If those explanations of emptiness that you hear are in any way correct, you can't become enlightened. You know? Forget it. Okay? It's only the Prasangika explanation that explains how a person can get enlightened. Why? Why can you get enlightened? Because your body and your mind are empty, okay? And they will become whatever you project. And whatever you project will come directly from keeping your book. And I'm not kidding, okay? Checking your vows every 2 hours or so, okay? Then, beautiful, you're out of here. So cool. And it's cool to watch it change, you know? And it's cool to know why it's changing. It's cool to know that you have a now found a method that works from day to day, and things start to change. That's very cool. That's very exciting. You know, everything you ever dreamed of about religion, you know, all those things you ever thought of when you were a little kid, actually happening to you. It's cool. It's amazing. You know, but only possible if you hold that viewpoint. Okay, it's only possible if this viewpoint is correct. So yeah, I would say something like, given that things are creations of my projections forced on us by our past karma, then we can, by leading an extraordinarily virtuous way of life, actually put an end to the projections of aging and death, become a tantric angel, and enter a tantric paradise in this very life. Okay? If that viewpoint is correct. Okay? Everything is possible. Okay? Last question. Almost. The Heart Truth Sutra says that the real goal of Buddhism... I mean, I got interviewed today by someone whose book is number one on the bestseller list somewhere. It's a Buddhist book. And I said... they said, does Buddhism say anything about life, you know, dying? Can you? And I said, yeah, I mean, the whole point of Buddhism, you can stop aging and death. They said, I never heard that before. You know? Direct quotation. Okay? I never heard that before. Never heard the Heart Sutra. Okay? Here's question 8. The Heart Sutra says that the real goal of Buddhism is to, quote, stop the process of aging and death through, quote, stopping our ignorance, quote. Okay? Is this a literal or a figurative statement? Quite literal. Okay? And don't skip it. That's the whole point of Buddhism. I mean, I can't believe it. It's amazing. You know, it's amazing that this is not taught in any Buddhist class that I'm aware of. You know what I mean? The whole point is that. When people say you're exaggerating, I got a letter from somebody that said, don't exaggerate. It gives people false hope, you know. I don't know. That's what the Heart Sutra says. Okay. If it's literal, then why have we not seen any person who stopped the process of aging and death? You have to be very close to it to see it. In anybody else, okay? Do you see His Holiness the Dalai Lama as Avalokiteshvara, or you just kind of think he might be because Tibetans say so? You see what I mean? I'm afraid the case is the second, okay? Do you see Kenrin Pache as an aging man with bad knees, or do you see him as Yamantaka? You know what I mean? If he's ever got mad at you, you'd see Okay. No, because your karma is not up to it, okay? Okay? Really. Is the glass of liquid water? Is it true to say that the glass of liquid is not amrita, deathlessness, nectar, because you can't see it that way? Is it true to say this is not a pen because somebody else sees, because lower forms of life see it as something to chew on? I mean, if all the dogs in the world swore to God there were no pens in the world, would that be the case? You see what I mean? Of course you haven't seen anybody like that. You have to be very close to it to see it, and you will. You know, you get very close, you'll start meeting these people, and say, you'll say what Master Asanga said when he met Maitreya. I've been trying to meditate on you for 12 years. Where were you? And Maitreya says, I was sitting next to you in your cave. You spit on me all the time. You know, I was like dodging your spit all the time. He says, but I didn't see you. Of course you didn't see me. You weren't pure enough to finish the 12 years. Okay, that's all. Direct quotation. Okay, direct, real experience. Yeah. Okay, that's good. He says, I'm putting my mind only hat on. That the who is bringing? He says, if I was a mind-only head-on, could I say that, you know, the Prasangika guys, those middleweight guys, are just trying to bring up the people to the mind-only school. Of course, that's exactly what they say. Why? They say the second turning of the wheel was figurative. They say the third turning of the wheel was, after all, it's the last one. You know? That's the one where Buddha would have said, okay, I'm about to pass away, I better tell you guys the truth now. You know, I didn't mean it when I said everything was empty and nothing had any nature of its own and it didn't exist of its own. Okay? They say exactly that. These you nihilists say nothing exists. Okay? Of course there's a pen there. You think there's no pen there? You want me to write on your face with it, Mr. Middleweight? Okay? You know what I mean? They would say that. Right? We went through that. Okay. Last thing. There's a very, very beautiful section. Geshe Thupten Renchen was very, very adamant that we go through it. And he said he had heard about some conferences in India where they invited scholars from all over the world to come and discuss Buddhism. And there's a Middle Way conference that actually took place. I'm sorry, Mind Only conference. And then people were trying to argue that the Mind Only school's idea of emptiness was the right one. And that even people like Jetsun Kapa believed it, you know. So Geshe Thupten Renchen, he's memorized this text backward and forward. He can recite it backwards and forwards. He said, look on page 236, you know, and we look back at page 236. And there is Jetsun Kapa's final words of the book, which is a very good place to leave it, okay? So here's Jetsun Kapa's final words. They ask him, he says, somebody comes up and asks him, well, which, you've now spent all this part of your life explaining the mind-only school and the middle-way school, meaning the Prasangika school. And he said, now which one's right? Okay, which way of interpreting reality is literal and which way is figurative? Who's got it right and who's got it wrong? Which one do you believe? Okay, and then he says a very beautiful thing. Say Ludup. Luksang. Tsor. Minjin. Soon. Okay, last thing. Okay, last thing. Ludup means... Lu means Naga. Dup means Arjuna. Okay, Naga Arjuna. Okay, Nagarjuna. Okay. Ludup means Nagarjuna. Luksang means that beautiful system, you know, of Nagarjuna. Which is, by the way, exactly what we've been talking about with the pen for the last 2 years or 3 years, okay? Or whenever. Tsor means tip-top, best, okay? Minzin, not consider it the best. Not consider it the best. Su means who on earth? You know, what do you think, I'm a schmuck, you know? I mean, who would fail to recognize that this explanation is the highest, okay? This lets you be a tantric deity in this life. This lets you get out of dying and old age and wrinkles and all that stuff. You know, it's going to put the cosmetics companies out of business, okay? I mean, this is something great. You know, he says, of course, you know. By the way, the lines before that say, look, I really respect all the other systems. You know, he takes care to say, I greatly appreciate certain elements of all the other systems. But come on, you know, this is the one. Okay? This explanation of emptiness is the one. The one that Nagarjuna taught. Okay? which is the one that we just talked about. Okay? That the way things exist is as a projection forced on you by your past karma. And if you want to get to heaven, okay, you just have to clean up your karma. Okay? Is it enough to know that? No. Is it enough to have that viewpoint? No. Then you actually have to keep your vows. You have to study all the vows you have, and you have to keep them. And the only way to do it in practice is to check them every few hours. And that is a tantric commitment. I'll teach you, I'll break all the rules. That's one of the most important tantric commitments. You must stop every hour or two and sit down and open your book and check your next vow and see how you're doing. You must. Tundu. Lamenyon. You must do it. Okay? And it's not enough to sit there and recite something. Okay? You won't change. And if you do that on a minute-to-minute, hour-to-hour basis, with whom? All sentient beings or your family, the people at your workplace, and your friends? For all sentient beings, but it's going to be the people around you, okay? I mean, unfortunately, this is all sentient beings for you. And these are the people that you have to keep your vows with. It's not like some cosmic thing, you know? You have to keep your vows with the people that it's hardest to keep your vows with, which is your immediate friends, family, and workers. And that's how you get enlightened. It's very amazing. And it's thinking about little things like stealing pens, making phone calls, you know, looking at someone's husband or wife. It's by keeping those virtues that get you enlightened. It's very cool. And because everything's a projection. Okay? Yeah. So how long have I been keeping my book? About 8 years or something, 7 years. Did Rinpoche get me to do it? I can't talk about that much. Okay. Did Rinpoche get me to do it? Of course. When you take a type of initiation, you swear to do tundra. Okay, that's a good place to leave it. We'll do a prayer. Sasi Bhagi Sushimeta Chang Vira Vinci Nyende Kempadi Sange Shindu Mite Uwagi Jogo Nanda Shingla
been listening to What the Buddha Really Meant with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute. The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to the Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.